stand for the reading of the gospel. The gospel reading today is taken from Luke chapter 12, verses 27 through 34. Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not clothed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? And do not keep striving for what you are to eat and what you are to drink, and do not keep worrying, for it is the nations of the world that strive after all these things, and your Father knows that you need them. Instead, strive for his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Do not be afraid, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give alms. Make purses for yourselves that do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. You may be seated. Well, my first thought is that I would really like to take the Bible and remove Joshua from my Bible, however many pages that is, and then to put Joshua in some of that stuff there so that it isn't quite so bloody. Because if you've read the lesson this week, you have been up to here with blood and guts and gore, and God gets the credit for every death. And that is not very fun to consider. And then isn't there some attention that I feel with what Kim has just read from the gospel lesson and then what is going on in the Hebrew lesson in Joshua, where on the one hand, don't worry about it. Don't strive for those things that people of the earth strive for. And then on the other hand, go and just get rid of those people totally in our story reading this week. And boy, isn't that the statement of faith right there, where sometimes we would just like it to be more plain and upfront and kosher and comfortable. Like that. Just pour some water on and make it nice. Make it, I don't know if it'd be drinkable or not. I'm not going to try that. I don't suggest anybody do that. But so did anybody else have some of those same thoughts with the reading of Joshua and killing, you know, all these people so that they could have the land? And then we hear Jesus saying, but don't strive for these things. And it's interesting because the very thing that God spent 40 years in the wilderness trying to do is to form a people that would be dependent on him and his grace and his direction and would not be like everybody else. So then the first thing that God tells him to do, according to the writer of Joshua, is to go in and kill everybody who's not like that. Gosh, I don't like this story. I don't like the book of Joshua in some sense. Oh, it ends up on a high note. We all know the statement of Joshua. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. You go do what you want, but we're going to serve the Lord. Well, yeah, he's now got the whole land, so he has no complaints about anything, does he? Some things are hard to figure out. Now, I will say, however, and in fact, Jane and I just figured this out this morning, that it was about, in fact, in the story, I don't know if anybody has your story here. I didn't carry mine in today. I've been carrying it all the time. Do you have your story here? It is important in the story when you're reading it to reference the timeline that is on page, starts on page, we call it X1, but it's page 11. The timeline of the story. Now, if you look at that timeline real closely, you'll notice that it's been about 460 years since Jacob and his boys left this very area to go to Egypt. Okay? Now, and by the way, reading commentaries about the stories of Joshua and what's going on in Joshua is like, it's really hard to get a single track on that. Because some commentators will say it was like a homecoming. They were going to their great-great-great-grandparents' place. Because they came, the people of Jacob's heritage, lineage, came from this very land of Canaan. And then, of course, the famine hit and Joe was down in Egypt and said, hey, guys, come on down. And so they left their kin, many of whom maybe died prematurely back there, but they left their kin to go to Egypt where there was plenty to eat. And, you know, this is another coming back home, and everybody's supposed to be overjoyed. Oh, well, I remember your great-great-great-grandfather or whatever, you know, yeah, sure, come on in. Let's have lunch. It's a potluck. We've invited all the relatives over. That's one of the ways that people interpret this taking over of the land. Yeah. So why all the bloodshed? I don't know. It's hard to figure, isn't it? And but it sounds better if you look at our mighty God killing all these people and saying I'll go before you. But whatever good happens, or whatever happens, it's always God's doing in the way they write the Bible and all this. Now just in case you're wondering about this, and if you're not, more power to you, but there are various ways to read the Bible. Now, about 3 weeks ago in the Wired Word, the Wired Word is a Sunday school class that meets in the Wesley Room every Sunday. They've been doing that for about 10, well, they were doing that well before 10 years ago, actually. But for about 9 years, they've been using the Wired Word curriculum now. And about 3 weeks ago, the curriculum had an item about revisionist history. And what it amounts to is advanced placement United States history curriculum has been changed some. And so there's some difference of opinion. And what happened is in Colorado, a whole bunch of people in Jefferson County, in the Jefferson County school system, walked out. The students walked out because the school board is saying that we can't use that curriculum. Because, and some of the people who are saying that that curriculum is no longer appropriate, they're saying that it's revisionist history. Now, we're gonna talk about that a little bit, because looking at the Bible is a living document, and while we have the words that were written, I think how we view it and the perspective from which we view it change pretty consistently. And I believe that the Bible is the part of the inspiration aspect of the Bible is that it might mean something different in our day than it meant to the original people, although we need to understand the original context of it as well. Now, let's go to the next one here, just to remind us that disciples, by definition, study, grow, learn, change as they seek to become more learned of their leaders' teachings, to the end that their lifestyle becomes more and more indistinguishable from the behaviors, habits, and practices of that leader. Now, that's my definition. We could talk about that, I suppose, but we have a group right now that's actually talking about a discipleship pathway and how do we grow as disciples. And one of the ways, of course, that we have to do that, we have to get into the Bible and let it form us and mess with it and so that we get into it and it starts to pull us apart like that thing that Kim read that has nothing to do with the thing that we've been reading this week in Joshua, the way it seems. And we need to sit with that divergence of, oh man, it hurts. And so disciples have to do that. But anyway, let's go to the next slide. Revisionist history. And this is out of Wikipedia, the reinterpretation of Orthodox views. There's all kinds of big words there, aren't there? But that reinterpretation of Orthodox views. Orthodox is just the way things have always been, and so that's the way that we're going to leave them. On evidence, motivations, and decision-making processes surrounding a historical event. It's interesting. My idea of history is that history is always defined by a certain number of people who said that's historical, because there's all kinds of things that happen that haven't been identified as history, and they aren't in anybody's book. Nobody determined that was part of the history. And so history is the product of a certain number of people, and of course, history is normally defined by the people who have the power. In one day and age, and still in parts of this world, history is determined by those who can write, those who have communication, those who have technology, those who have the ability to keep track of things. Not all cultures do that. When somebody started writing on a cave, they became a historian, and they determined that that hunt was important. They defined history. When people started writing in the Bible, they determined what was history, what was important. Did they write down everything? No. The cave people didn't write down everything. We don't write down everything. Though the word revisionism is sometimes used in a negative way, constant revision of history is part of the normal scholarly process of writing history. I lived up in Northwest Iowa for 6 years, and there all of our TV stations came out of South Dakota. Our major daily paper came out of South Dakota. They don't celebrate Columbus Day in South Dakota, with a significant percentage of their population being Native Americans. If they would celebrate it as Columbus Day, it would be the invasion of Columbus into our lands. It would be like the people who lived in Canaan. And then these other people came and started to slaughter and remove us from where we had developed our living. And so I don't remember what they call it in South Dakota. I think it's Native American Day. A what? Indigenous Peoples Day. Thank you. Thank you. And so you see how history, now they didn't used to say that, but history has a new viewpoint and different vantage points pretty constantly because we change our perspective. God doesn't change, but we change our perspective, and that is appropriate, and that's always been the way it has been. Now, did I put that in there twice? The Urban Dictionary then. That's this one. When people with the benefit of years or generations of hindsight, typically with ulterior motive, try to rewrite history as it originally occurred. Now, this is a little bit more saying that revisionist history is a negative term because they have ulterior motives. And that can be, and I would suggest that all history has a nuance. All history has a context. Whenever you or I decide what's historical, we have a particular perspective from which we're viewing it, and someone else may not look at it from that same viewpoint, that same perspective. Does that make it less historical? No. But might they have a history that we don't? Well, definitely. So, and I just believe that we all have, if not ulterior motives, we certainly have unnamed and maybe viewpoints that we haven't even identified objectively. In Colorado, and this is just a context of that one example of the discussion of revisionist history, one gal then stated, materials should promote citizenship, patriotism, essentials, and benefits of the free enterprise system, respect for authority, and respect for individual rights. Materials should not encourage or condone civil disorder, social strife, or disregard of the law. Instructional materials should be present, should present positive aspects of the United States and its heritage. Content pertaining to political and social movements in history should present balanced and factual treatment of the positions. Now, if you look at that, line. There's all kinds of things that somebody might have an issue with. And there's all kinds of things that are not stated, but it's interesting that students chose their individual rights and did civil disobedience in response to this attitude. And they said, you know what? I want history as it really is. And so on both sides of this debate in Colorado, on both sides, they're accusing the other side of revision or censorship. Or both. Both sides are. History is contextual. Always has been, always will be. It's interesting that this week, I think it was this week, that we had, the people convicted, the Blackwater security people convicted of what amounts to mass murder in Iraq when they were... keeping our people safe. And I thought of that, there we were reading Joshua, and then we read about that, and I'm thinking, gosh, if they had had trials in Joshua's time, what would have happened if indeed there was this much bloodshed when they went into the land? Would there be, we wouldn't be done with the trials yet, for heaven's sakes, when you're talking tens of thousands of people that die. I wish I could dish this out to you in some kind of real palatable kind of way. But the fact is, they went into this land. Their instructions were to form a new land where people operate in a new way. And we don't have much evidence of that happening with their entrance. I don't get it, frankly. Regardless of who I read or what viewpoint a person uses, I don't get it. This morning in the confirmation class, and part of the mental meanderings of my week was looking at some of the instructions that the people were given, and if you want to look at it this way, at the boundary. In other words, they were here, they were headed there, and both Exodus and Deuteronomy have a setting where God is telling the leader, whether it be Moses or Joshua, usually it's Moses, but tell him that this is how we have been behaving, but this is how you're going to do it in the new land. And I don't see that happening today in Israel, in how they treat the Palestinians. And I don't get it. And so... The history continues, and I don't understand everything that goes, but I look for the presence of God, and I expect God to somehow bring some kind of redemption to humanity. And sometimes it's because of what we do, and sometimes it's in spite of who we are and what we do. But do I get this? No. If you do, I'm willing to listen. And so each of us must struggle. And you know what? I believe that as faithful disciples, each one, and I'm not going to call it revisionist, each one of us as disciples is called to struggle with it on our own, individually. And we can help one another out. We can meet in our groups, and we can share our struggles, and we can share our input in how we perceive God has worked and is working in the world. But ultimately, every one of us struggles with these same things. Is it revisionist? No. I think it's faith. I think it's faithful that each one of us says, God, I need to see you. I need to know how this works and how you're working in the world today. And to continue that yearning and that journey for that message. I pray that you have grace as you struggle with these things in the story. It would be nice if some stories weren't included. And in fact, that's one of the things I look for on page 494 and 495 of the story is, what chapters did they exclude? And they excluded a lot of blood and guts in this one, frankly, if you read Joshua out of the Bible, the whole thing. But it's still part of the story, and they didn't clean it up much. I pray for you that you may read the story and see Christ in the middle of it. But overall, we have a new word, and that word came from Kim and her reading of the words of Jesus. He said, you know what? There are things more important than land. There are things more important than procuring and gaining. And that is making sure that the poor, the widow, the orphan, the sojourner are treated well in your land. May we do that for the sake of Christ.